You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're exploring how we react to bias and our personal awareness of it. Specifically, we're looking at studies involving white parents' awareness of racial bias and how families talk about it with their kids. A conversation about race is sensitive. It can be difficult, but not to be ignored. There is space for you here. How do you talk with your kids about current events related to race? Do you talk with them after seeing local or national headlines about discrimination or maybe racist images or tweets? We're at 800-642-1234 throughout the hour. Sylvia Perry is an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern University. Her recent research has examined racial bias awareness, talking with kids about race, and the racial climate of medical schools. Sylvia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So why does it matter that white parents are, for the most part, leaving their kids to learn about race from the world around them and at school?
Well, it matters because if parents don't have an explicit conversation with their children about race and racial bias in the world, children start to figure out that information on their own. They look around to their peers and how they're perceiving others are being treated to make sense of who is favored and who is not favored within the world and how they should treat those individuals as well. And if their parents aren't really providing them with explicit information about why people might be treated differently, for example, that might actually sort of unintentionally lead children to have preferences for certain groups over others.
So their inability to really understand what's going on the playground, maybe you need to interject there as a parent to help them understand some of the dynamics?
That's right. So they might not understand why it's going on. So if they notice that one child's being treated differently than another and they look a little different than the other child, they might not understand why that's happening, but they understand what it means. They understand that it looks like this child is being treated really nicely and this child isn't. And so it's helpful if parents can fill in the gaps about why children might be treated differently for reasons that are sort of outside of their control. And that will help the child understand the context of the situation instead of maybe blaming it on the child who experienced the negative behavior.
And I understand they're able to pick up these cues very early on about race.
Yes, very early. So by 3 or 4 years old, we see evidence in psychology research of children showing preferences. White children, for example, showing preferences for white children over black children. And these preferences persist, over a long time in our lives and influence our behaviors and our attitudes toward others.
We also know that schools are trying to have a lot more conversations within the curriculum about issues of racial bias. How could parents check whether their school is providing adequate education about race?
Well, they could talk to their child about what kinds of conversations they're having in their school. If they attend meetings in which they have discussions with teachers and administrators in their schools, they could check to see what kinds of conversations are being held. Basically, there's research showing that if there are teachers in the classroom talking about the history of race and racial bias, that this can potentially increase empathy in white children, their attitudes toward children of color. It could lead them to be less prejudiced because they understand the history and context of prejudice. And so having those conversations both in the home and at school and providing that context can be really helpful for children.
And in recent years, we've seen the rollout as well of the kindness curriculum, which it could perhaps also have an impact there.
Right. So I think that in general, teaching kids to be empathetic toward others and the importance of empathy can be really important. When children can empathize with others, they are sort of able to think to themselves, how would I feel if I experienced this behavior, right? Or if somebody treated me this way. And it helps sort of break down those barriers as it relates to children making assumptions about other children and maybe treating other children not as nicely because of their differences, if that child can empathize with that other child.
We're talking about racial bias this hour, how parents navigate this, talk with their kids about race. Our guide is Sylvia Perry. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern University. She's also principal investigator of the school's Social Cognition and Intergroup Processes Lab. I notice around Martin Luther King Jr. Day, my kids strike up conversations with me about the work of MLK, and I know I try to engage at all of those little openings for having bigger conversations. How do you talk about race in your house? When does it come up? How do you go there? You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sylvia, before your study, how much did researchers believe white parents have race-related conversations with their kids? How often was it going on?
Not very often. So much of the work that we know of suggests that depending on who's being asked or who they're, what the sample is or who they're asking, there might be as few as 50% to 70% of the sample. Let me rephrase that. So 50 to 70% of those parents say they are not having conversations, right? Mm. So very few parents are having these conversations with their children. And what's happening is the majority of white parents who are having these conversations, if they're talking about it at all, they're using something called colorblind language. And by that, I mean, they're not really explicitly mentioning race. They're just saying, hey, we're all the same, right? Race doesn't matter, for example.
And that can have huge implications because we know it does matter. It can also have an impact on implicit bias, not being aware of our biases.
Absolutely. So I think that if children grow up thinking that race doesn't matter and it's not really of concern, although much of the research, when you ask parents about why they tell their kids that race does not matter, of course, that is well-intended. They're well-intended, and they want to say that because they want their kid to not judge someone based on the race from which they come, right? But unfortunately, because we live in a society in which we are constantly exposed to information suggesting that some people are favored over others, we do develop those implicit biases, so those associations between good things and certain people and bad things and other people. And if we're not really aware of the possibility that we can have those biases, it's difficult to curb them.
How different are white parents than parents of other races or ethnicities when it comes to talking with kids about race? How different are these conversations?
Yeah, so white parents are significantly less likely to have conversations about race with their children in general relative to other parents, in particular underrepresented minority parents, so Latinx and Black parents, for example. When Black parents, for example, have conversations with their children about race, it starts very early on, and it often serves as sort of a protective mechanism because Black children, from a very young age, experience racism. And so either their parents will sort of try to have that conversation with them before they have that negative experience, or they'll end up having that conversation as a result of their child having had that negative experience. Whereas white parents often feel like if they just tell their children that everyone's all the same, or if they don't mention it at all, if they sort of demonstrate in the household that they are not racist by never saying anything outwardly biased against groups, right, that their children will just not develop any biases.
We're talking with Northwestern University social psychologist Sylvia Perry about bias and how we have sensitive conversations with our kids about prejudices. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're exploring how to handle conversations about race, racism, diversity, and inclusion with our kids. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Even babies notice differences like skin color, like eye shape and hair texture. Researchers at the University of Toronto found signs of racial bias and the ability to notice race as young as 6 months old. So when do you think parents should start talking with their child about race? Is it ever too soon? Is it better to wait until they're older? What is your approach? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Northwestern University's Sylvia Perry stays with us. She's our guide this hour. Let's take a call now. Leah is joining us from Pewaukee this morning. Hi, Leah.
Hi. Your show is very interesting. And my question is, when we have these conversations with our children, how do we start these conversations? I mean, I hear I've been doing it wrong by saying, like, you know, honey, you should treat everybody the same. It doesn't matter their skin color. So, and now I've been doing this wrong. So how do I correct this? And how should parents start and have these conversations?
Leah, thank you. Sylvia, where are those important openings?
So I think that potentially one place that parents could start that might serve as a guide is to try to perhaps purchase books that would help them have a conversation with their child. So perhaps a story having to do with the history of racial bias or people's different experiences because of the groups from which they come. So you could even start with a book, potentially, depending on the age of the child, that sort of emphasizes empathizing with others based on their differing experiences and issues that they may have encountered in life, and try to translate that discussion into how people might be treated differently because of their race and might have similar experiences and feel similar, negative feelings about having been treated that way. Talking to your child about how they would feel if they were treated that way, and just introducing them to the idea that racism and racial bias exists. It's a thing. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do in our research, is just to get parents to talk about examples or incidents in which children encounter bias, and talk through with their child what that looks like, how that might feel for another child, so that they can put themselves in the shoes of that other person.
Sylvia, I know there are so many books out there. The one that really caught my family's attention this year was The Undefeated, which is a poem by Kwame Alexander. But it's illustrations by Kadir Nelson that really drew my kids in to look at what do these pictures mean and what are they telling us about race.
Wow, that sounds like a really great book. I'm actually not familiar with that one.
Yeah, it's a board book, and it's a poem by Kwame Alexander. So, Leah, I would, I'm not sure what age your children are, but I would definitely, say check that one out.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leah. Let's go to Helen now in Madison. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Well, I have lived all over. I have not just lived in Wisconsin. I've lived in Tennessee and Illinois and Indiana and Kansas, which is where desegregation started, by the way. And I have raised a lot of children. I had foster care. So I had children of different races, sizes, colors, shapes. And I do not agree with her. Having conversations is great, but do not teach a child about all the different races. You teach them about being individuals. You teach them about how to care for one another, not based on what their race is, but who they are as individuals. So I disagree. My daughter, when we lived in Tennessee, actually got harassment because I had children of all different races at our home. I actually had them come to my home and tell me not to do this. So I know what it is to be discriminated against. I know what it is to have this harassment, and I've stood up to it.
So, Helen, I want to pause there and allow Sylvia to respond to what you're saying. Sylvia, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I agree that just labeling children by race to do it is not an appropriate thing to do. But what we know is that from a very young age, children notice these differences. They notice girls and boys, they notice differences in skin tone, and then they start to notice differences in race. They notice through nonverbal behaviors, as well as what they hear people say, that certain groups are being treated differently than others. They notice that on the news or in shows they watch, that children who look different from one another or people who look different from one another are treated differently. And so the important thing here is not just to label people by race, because that's not necessarily helpful. It's to provide children with context and understanding about why people might be treated differently. Because if parents don't provide children with that context, sometimes children just come to their own conclusions. And so, you know, that's what a lot of developmental psychologists who study this, who sort of see that children just tend to categorize, tend to place labels on things, whether it's the official label or not. You know, they really emphasize the importance of helping children make sense of why people are being treated differently, and that it's not the fault of the child, right, who is experiencing the negativity, that they didn't do anything wrong to experience that.
We're talking about racial bias with Sylvia Perry from Northwestern University. She's a psychologist who studies how individual differences affect people and the implications of racial bias in our world. So when you do want to talk about race in your family, when do you bring it up? How do you bring it up? And what do you want to accomplish? How does talking about racism with your children make you feel? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sylvia, let's look at your research for a moment. You focused on parents talking with children 8 to 12 years old. Why were you interested in studying children in this age group at this developmental stage?
Right. So we chose this age group because what we know is that around this age, children basically stop saying out loud their thoughts about differences in racial groups, so white children in particular. And then they basically at that point learn that it's not socially acceptable to say those things out loud. And so if you were to ask them, do you have a preference for white over black children, for example, before 8, children are more likely to talk about racial groups and say, yeah, I noticed that this kid is treated differently than this kid and I don't like them. And then around that age, they stop saying that. But if you were to look at their implicit biases, so the associations between positive words and negative words with white and black children, they show a preference there still. So meaning when they don't have to say it out loud, right, but we're just trying to get at their implicit associations, what sort of automatic associations they make between goodness and badness and white and black children, that's still there. So the point here for us was that this is a time in which kids have sort of learned that it's not okay to talk about race outwardly, even though they might still have some biases. So maybe this is a really important time to see what parents are doing and how they might differ in terms of how they approach these conversations, because this is a really important turning point in a child's development.
Could parents wait until kids are in their teens to have these conversations? And what might these conversations look like for teenagers?
They can. At that point, children have sort of already had a lot of information in their social world to start to understand what groups are favored over others. And it's probably influenced their own attitudes, whether they're aware of it or not. In terms of having conversations with teenagers, I think that, you know, a similar kind of conversation could be had to what would happen with a younger child, but it could be more specific, right? So in our research, we specifically talk about current events that were happening at the time, like the Eric Garner case or Trayvon Martin, and, you know, parents actually specifically having a conversation with their children about what happened in that situation, whether there might be bias in policing, you know, whether it might be the case that, you know, Black men or Black children would, you know, feel less comfortable walking down the street when they pass a police officer, et cetera. So, you know, having more specific conversations about current events and the history of bias could happen with teenagers because they're more capable of understanding those complex topics.
And they may be following them on their social media. They may be following them in the headlines, even certainly talking about them at school.
Absolutely.
We're looking at racial bias this hour. Northwestern University's Sylvia Perry studies how attitudes and bias form and influence behavior. Some of her recent research delves into talking with kids about race and the racial climate of medical schools. When did you start to develop a recognition of race? When did you see it in your child? Did it come up in your conversations with them or at school? How did you respond to the situations they've encountered and their questions about prejudices? Be part of this. There's room for you at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Our conversation continues with social psychologist Sylvia Perry right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Ken. Thanks for being here. We're having a conversation about recognizing our own biases. And then how do we talk with children about racial differences? By toddlerhood and preschool age, children are able to internalize racial bias. So what does that mean for how we can better role model and be more accepting and respecting people's differences and their similarities? When did your children start to develop a recognition of race? Did it come in your conversations with them or at school? And how did you respond to their questions? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Northwestern University professor Sylvia Perry stays with us. She studies racial bias from multiple angles, including parenting and healthcare. Sylvia, let's take a moment here and look closer at bias awareness. You looked at the role of bias awareness in parents. What do you mean by bias awareness?
Sure. So we have long thought about modern prejudice as sort of this duality of people wanting to be egalitarian and to treat everyone equally, but potentially having some underlying biases that they may or may not be aware of that impact their behaviors and the way that they think about others. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to capture people's awareness of that, thinking pattern in that I know that, or I feel like I want to be egalitarian, right? And I know it's wrong to treat Black people differently, but I still feel like I might hold some unconscious negative attitudes, or I still feel like when I'm interacting with Black people, I might experience some discomfort, right? So just allowing people to endorse items that say things like that and say, yeah, I think that might be true of who I am.
So being more honest and open about it.
That's right. Yeah. So many of us may recognize that, you know, we have these preferences, even though they might not be consistent with who we want to be. But individuals who I would call bias aware are not just individuals who might recognize this in themselves, but also will endorse things and say, yeah, you know, say it out loud. Yes, I do think that even though I want to treat everyone fairly, when I encounter certain groups of people, I feel less comfortable around them, or I think I might treat them differently, even though I don't intend to, et cetera.
How do your measurements look like? How do you determine whether someone has higher or lower bias awareness?
Right. So people basically read these questions, these statements, sort of, you know, consistent with this idea that they might have unconscious negative attitudes toward Black people, or they think that they might be, acting differently. So, for example, even though I know it's not appropriate, I sometimes feel I hold unconscious negative attitudes toward Black people. So people who strongly agree with that, right, would be really high on the scale, all the way down to someone who strongly disagrees, which would be a 1 on the scale at the bottom, strongly agree a 7. And we basically just take people's answers to all of these questions and we average them to see how high or low they are in terms of endorsing these items. And we use this scale in a continuous way. So we don't cut people off and say, this person's high in bias awareness, this person's low. Our research really sort of is trying to emphasize as you are more likely to endorse these items, you're more likely to do X. And as you're less likely to endorse these items, you're less likely to do X, right? So we're kind of thinking about it on a continuum that as your score on this increases, it increases your likelihood of doing something, for example.
And when you look at different groups, how often do you say white parents have high bias awareness compared to parents of other races or ethnicities?
Well, this measure, we use it across different samples, and because we sort of use it in terms of the mean in an aggregate, we don't really say this percentage of white parents are aware specifically. We just say that, you know, here's the average score, right? And there may be dispersion around the score. Some people are higher or lower than this average. But this measure is specifically meant to capture this awareness in white individuals because of the very unique history of racial bias between white and black individuals in the U.S., as well as this unique history basically making it such that it is not socially desirable or socially acceptable to admit that you might have biases within our country if you were a white individual, right? Mm. So this measure is really trying to pick up on that idea that, like, you know, it's not socially acceptable to say this, yes, but, you know, I do think that I might have some of these biases and I want to endorse it. And, you know, we usually find that people, you know, when if you average everyone's score, it's about in the middle, right? About a 3.5 to 4. But of course, there are going to be people who are higher versus lower on that.
Let's bring in another voice here. Troy is joining us from Muskego with thoughts on this. Good morning, Troy.
Good morning. There's two. I'm a Caucasian. I have 4 children. And one of the things that I think are essential in educating your children on race is, one of them is black. You got to explain to your kids the Black Lives Matter movement. And the other one is, I believe in also explaining to my children besides the Black Lives Matter movement, also I explain to my children what white privilege is. And I think you have to also, as I find myself educating older people who are Caucasian, especially in Wisconsin, especially if they grew up around Milwaukee, educating them on those types of things. Matter of fact, my son, he wanted to be a police officer, and one of the things I taught him was I had him host birthday parties in a place for that catered more towards black people, because I wanted him to get him to see how, you know, just to see people for who they are as themselves and not in these stereotypes that often come with growing up in a city that's got systemic racism.
Troy, thank you. 2 conversations there, Sylvia, around Black Lives Matter and what white privilege is.
Yeah, so I think that there were a few things that stood out about what Troy said to me, and that is, I think that the idea of talking about Black Lives Matter as well as white privilege, it really is sort of couching these differences in terms of how people are treated in the history of our country and racial bias and systemic bias, and helping children understand that it's not just on an individual level. You yourself are a biased individual, and it's more so the systemic bias, right? And helping children understand how those systems may have led certain individuals to have more than others and led to the place that we are today and why we are treated differently. And another thing that I thought that was really great is this idea of making sure that his children have numerous different experiences with Black people so that they don't use stereotypes. And so what we basically know is that when people don't have a lot of information to go off of, right, when they meet someone because they have had very limited contact and very few experiences, they do fall back on stereotypes. They might use something that they've sort of seen on the news or the very few limited interactions they've had. They just have this sort of idea in their head of who a Black person is. And whether they're consciously aware of it or not, they might apply that stereotype or see that person through the lens of their stereotype because they don't have enough additional information to think beyond that. Whereas if we have more exposure to people who come from groups that are different than our own, we have given, this has given us a lot of different examples, and we can sort of use what we say in psychology, individuating information. Each of these people is an individual, right? And they could all be different and not just this one, you know, group idea of who these individuals are.
We're talking with Sylvia Perry. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern, and you can join in here. How aware do you think your kids are of racial inequities? Have you traveled to places where they see greater differences? What do you say? What do you do? Have you talked about white privilege and Black Lives Matter? Join in here, 800-642-1234. Sylvia, one thing Troy also lightly touched on is that Wisconsin is a predominantly white state, especially outside of really large cities like Milwaukee. In some places, classrooms only have white children. Does that affect the importance of talking about race with kids?
Yeah, so I think whether it is a classroom that has a lot of diversity or not, these conversations are really important. I think that if it is the case that someone's living in a majority white or all white area, they, of course, are having very few opportunities to have interactions with people from other racial groups and really only have information that they notice on the news or see around them outside of their community, especially if their parents aren't talking about it at home. And so this makes it even more important in a lot of ways for parents and teachers to have conversations about other social groups and history and systemic bias. However, even people who are in diverse neighborhoods, if the contact that's happening is not positive or if the area is segregated, children can still form biases, right, based on this. So there's, a lot of research on intergroup contact and the positive and negative consequences of contact potentially. And, you know, if there's a lot of contact happening within your neighborhood with your neighbors and your friends, that can be really beneficial, right? Because you're having these one-on-one experiences with individuals from different racial groups. But just because you live in a diverse city or county doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to lead to positive attitudes. So parents still have to take a really active approach to making sure that their child understands systemic bias and prejudice to, reduce the possibility that they will develop biases.
We're talking about confronting racial bias in our lives, how to talk about it, how to have these conversations with our kids. A really interesting conversation here with Sylvia Perry as our guide. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern, where she studies bias awareness, including racial bias and how to talk with kids about race. Have you experienced a situation where that you didn't feel heard or that you had a difficult conversation with your child about race? How did it go? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring racial bias, personal awareness of it, and looking at studies involving white parents' awareness of racial bias and how They talk about it with their kids. It's a conversation about race with Sylvia Perry. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern University, where her research has examined racial bias awareness, talking about kids with race. Let's go back to the phones now. Jan is joining us from River Falls. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I was telling the gentleman that answered the phone that where I grew up many, many years ago was not necessarily a very integrated community, but it was integrated. And so I grew up with people of different nationalities and races, and I treated people pretty much how I would like to be treated. I did not treat anyone based on what color their skin was. And that was what was taught to my children, and that is what's being taught to my grandchildren as a result. And I would like to see everyone go back to the treat people like you would like to be treated.
Yeah, going back to
that. It doesn't matter who they are.
That golden rule. Sylvia, your thoughts here.
Yeah, so I think that the idea of perspective taking and trying to see to yourself, how would I want to be treated if I were to encounter someone, and, you know, how would I feel if, you know, I was treated in a negative way? I think that that can be really helpful in terms of learning other people's perspectives. I also think it's great to go beyond that as well. If parents feel like they have the tools to do that, to, you know, say, treat everyone, you know, the same, so in an egalitarian way, but also to, you know, provide other context and information for their children to help them understand why, if they might observe others treating someone differently, what that might mean.
Jan, thanks so much. You know, Sylvia, as we start to close here, what could your research mean for children as they're navigating this, as they're developing and learning about race all around them?
I think that one thing that I, you know, like to talk about is the idea. So Gordon Allport said this, you know, in the 1950s in his book, The Nature of Prejudice. He talked about the idea that prejudice can be caught and not necessarily taught. And what he's trying to say, and what we try to capture in some of our work, is that the things that are unspoken, like nonverbal behaviors, things that operate outside of our awareness, can impact how we view other groups and how our children perceive other groups. And so I think that in terms of, you know, how children learn from this information and what to sort of make of it, I think just the more that parents can talk with their children about these things and demonstrate that they value all groups, either through friendships or, you know, what they're exposing their children to in terms of protagonists, other things like that, will benefit children and allow them to, you know, engage with and have positive attitudes toward all different kinds of social groups. And it will also help them better navigate the world as they go out into it, because our country is a diverse country and it's becoming increasingly more diverse. And
even body language can make a difference.
Absolutely. So, right. So just showing sort of, you know, cold body language, right, towards someone versus more positive or warm body language can impact a child's attitudes. And parents oftentimes do these kinds of things and aren't even aware of it, right, that they might be seeming like they're a bit colder or less engaged with someone from one group than another. And that is specifically what we're talking about when we say that biases can be caught, that children can just pick up on these nonverbals.
Sylvia, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sylvia Perry is an assistant professor of psychology at Northwestern University. We've been talking about her research exploring racial bias and how parents can talk with their kids about race. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about crying in front of your kids.
Tequila Benton has always tried to be strong for her kids. But the Madison storyteller wonders if that comes at a price.
It's a rare thing to get a glimpse of yourself from the outside. All of your hard work, love, devotion, the sacrifices and sleepless nights, and think, I'm a pretty freaking awesome mom. Well, this is not one of those times. It's more like one of those occasions surrounded by half-folded baskets of clothes and piles of books and papers, screaming, will you kids just leave each other alone? Why am I always stepping on Legos? That's it. Go to bed. Everybody just go to bed. I forced a smile recalling that day. I was very near losing it. It was an overwhelming day, I said to my son. But you didn't cry, my little guy responded. In that instance, I realized how my kids must have saw me. As someone who instructs them on how to handle emotional overflows, but fails to take my own advice. Surely I've cried in front of my kids, right? Well, when I was pregnant, I remember crying all the time. Those ASPCA commercials get me every time. But that was late at night, and I'm sure my daughter was sleeping. Maybe one of the times when the pain from my migraine reached a fever pitch. Probably not, since I prefer to hide in the bathroom, you know, in the dark, in the tub, with a blanket over my head. I tend to hide in the bathroom a lot, I think, when that uncomfortable emotional side of me starts taking over. Could that be why my kids refuse to allow me any privacy in the bathroom? Even if I'm on the toilet, they feel it's okay to burst in, mid-argument, forcing me to mediate from the porcelain throne. Locking the door doesn't help either. I see little tiny fingers underneath the door. They slide notes under there. Hear my son screaming, Mom, I know you're not using the bathroom. You have your phone, I can see it. Poo particles are getting all over your phone. They don't know that I'm Googling affirmations because I'm replaying the last 14 years of my life trying to figure out what went wrong, and perhaps if I had cried more in front of their dad, he wouldn't have been so distant. He has told me on many occasions that he felt I was only open when I was crying and my guard was down. I wonder if my kids view me that same way. It bothers me as deeply as the constant tears that are ingrained on my shoulders that my mother cried on. I knew early on I didn't want to be emotional like that. I said I'd be a boulder like my grandmother, who I only ever saw shed a tear for my father's incarceration. Even when I saw her the last days of her life, laying in her hospital bed, she looked at me and smiled and motioned for me to come and sit next to her in the bed. I couldn't. I ran in the bathroom and cried, and I still regret that to this day. Moms do cry, I told my son. Like when you leave your Legos on the floor, and I step on them. Or, especially, when your sister uses up all the data, yeah, I cry. No, you curse, Mom. You don't cry. Okay, note to self, stop cursing, at least out loud. Or perhaps the next time I'm in the bathroom and one of them slides a note under the door, I'll write a reply back that says, Mom is crying, do not disturb, and slide it back out to them, poo particles and all. Thank you.
Tequila Benton's story came to us from the podcast Inside Stories, which features Madison storytellers and digs deeper into their lives. She's the co-host of the podcast and originally shared that story at a Listen to Your Mother event. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.